King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other province officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other province officials assembled for the dedication of the image that the king Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before it. Then they herald loudly proclaimed, "Nations and peoples of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipe, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into the blazing furnace. Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, and all kinds of music, all the nations and all the peoples of every language fell down and worshipped the image of gold the king Nebuchadnezzar had set up." Remember when we ended chapter 2, King Nebuchadnezzar was down on his hands and knees acknowledging Daniel's God as the God of gods. My, how things change when you turn that page. Remember also that the king had been presented with a statue made of 6 different materials. And on that statue, we didn't go into what they meant, and we're still not going into what they meant, except for I do want to stop and talk about the head of gold. See, the top layer was this head of gold. And in Daniel's interpretation, the head of gold stood Babylon. And of course, Daniel also told the king that Babylon would eventually be replaced by another kingdom. So says God. So you have to admire what the king decides to do with this interpretation. Instead of humbling himself before God, what does he do? He goes out and builds him a statue. And what is the statue entirely made of? Gold. And you understand what the king is telling God. He's basically thumbing his nose at God. He's saying, guess what? Wrong, God. Babylon is forever. Top to bottom, solid gold. And by the way, this is my humble opinion. I got a sneaky suspicion that when the king had this statue built, he went to the people making the statue and said, by the way, this is what I want it to look like. I want it to look like just like the statue that I had in my dream. Let me tell you about it. And I want it solid gold because I want everybody to know God's wrong. It's not going to end the way God said. So he makes it, and then he commands everybody, not only have I made the statue, thumbing my nose at God, telling him Babylon is forever, now everybody is going to kneel down and they are going to worship the statue, which in essence means they are going to worship Babylon. And since the king is the king of Babylon and he's in charge of everything, they're worshiping the king. And what he tells them is, if you choose not to, you're only going to choose not to once, because I shall destroy you. Matter of fact, we're going to throw you into the fiery furnace. And you know, I come out of that, and this is a freebie. You don't have to pay anything extra for this lesson today, but there's a great lesson that you need to take right out of this. Be careful when the world begins to promote God. There's always a catch. If you're looking to the world to promote you, to inspire you to serve God, then maybe you should remember what Jesus tells us in Matthew chapter 24 through 20, verses 23 through 24. At that time, if anyone said to you, "Look, look here is the Messiah," or "There he is," do not believe it, for false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and wonders and deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you ahead of time. There's going to be a lot of calls for us to go a lot of different things and chase a lot of different places. And God wanted us to remember the fact that, you know what? We aren't worshiping a statue of solid gold. We're worshiping riches, words, the I am. Unfortunately, there's a problem with this. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are going to find themselves literally caught in the crossfire between a world trying to dethrone God and their commitment to God. And you know what that means, right? They're going to have to take a stand. This wouldn't be their first stand because they were involved at the table. Remember, it wasn't just Daniel at that table. And they were involved with the whole dream thing. Remember when Daniel needed to have a prayer meeting, where'd he go? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were praying together. Interesting enough, this is the event that is the last one we hear about from Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They just sort of disappear in both biblical and natural history. Nobody knows what happened to them exactly after this particular story. And believe it or not, there are websites out there that they go through the whole theory of what happened to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're obsessed with figuring out what happened to these three guys. And you know what? Instead of us figuring out what happened to them, I want to study about what happened to them. So hopefully you've got your copy of the Bible with you today. If not, you can grab one out of the pew rack. You can make your way to Daniel chapter 3. Makes sense. We were in chapter 2 last week. So now here we are in chapter 3. And we're going to find out what happens when you decide to make a stand. I'm reading verses 13 through 15. Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods?" I thought we'd already figured this one out. I guess not. "You do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, the pipe, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand?" Now, the first time they said immediately. I mean, isn't that what all the other governors said? They said, "Hey, we're going to have this worship service, and we're all going to gather around the statue, and we're going to play some music, and if you don't get on your hands and knees before this statue, and you don't sing your song toward that statue, immediately we're going to take you out of the crowd, and we're going to throw you into the fiery furnace." However, when everybody dropped to their knees, and there stood Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego standing there all by themselves, they didn't take them to the fiery furnace. Oh, no, they took them to the king. And I got a sneaky suspicion they knew, because game on. Yeah. Because they had already encountered this God one time in their life. No, wait a minute. Two times in their life. And things had not gone the way they thought they would, so they decided, you know what, given who's the ones that will not kneel, perhaps we should take him to the king and let the king deal with these people. And so the king, they go before the king, and interesting enough, the king did not order them straight to the furnace. What did he do? He said, "Tell you what, obviously you guys missed the memo. You missed the note. You misunderstood. So let me explain to you exactly how this worked. That statue is now God. That statue represents me. We're going to play the song again. If you're ready to get on your hands and knees and worship, all is forgiven. You can go about your life and you can go back to what you were doing. But if you don't, then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? Who's it going to be? Me or this God you're talking about? Because, gentlemen, we're no longer talking about food and dreams. We're now talking about life or death." "You see, I do know your God. And your God is big enough to keep you healthy from my table. And I know your God. Your God is wise enough to solve my dreams. Do you honestly believe your God can protect you from my fire?" That's an important question, don't you think? I mean, we're no longer talking about not eating the meat, and we're no longer talking about not telling the king what he wants. We're now talking about, this is do or die, here's the moment, will you stand? And I want to tell you something. Let's talk about me for a second. Because had I been looking at that moment in my life, and God is saying, here is the crossroads, I could probably justify why I should stand down in front, kneel down in front of that statue. Because you know what I could do? I could take the naming clause. And you're probably thinking, what's the naming clause? Ah, you see, this is why you don't ignore kids' sermons. Remember when we were talking a few weeks, the butterfly sermon back around the end of the last quarter, and we had the kids up here, and I read you the story of Naaman, and Naaman became a follower of God, and then when he was all done following, this is what he said in verse 18, but may the Lord forgive your servant for this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Ramon to bow down, and he is leaning on my arm, and I have to bow there also, when I bow down in the temple of Ramon, may the Lord forgive your servant for this. Couldn't Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego just do the same thing? And can't I just do the same thing? God, we're at this moment, and understand, I'm kneeling on the outside, but on the inside, I'm standing up in defiance. I'm going to get down and worship, but you understand, I'm not really worshiping that statue. Shh. We just won't tell anybody. I'm worshiping you. It's just, I got to do this. It's what life requires of me right now. That works, right? How many times have you used that to justify what you're doing? You know, God, it really is about you, but right now it can't be about you. You forgive, right? Of course, they could have taken the approach I'm much better at. They could have parsed through some scriptures and found themselves a little teeny loophole to walk through. I mean, just listen to this. You should not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven or above the earth or beneath the waters below. You shall not bow down and worship them. For I, the Lord, am your God, and I am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sins of their parents to the third and fourth generation to those who hate me, but showing love to the thousand generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. Did you hear it? I got my loophole. This verse clearly says I should not make a statue and bow down to it. I didn't make this statue. Somebody else made that statue. So since I didn't make the statue, then you know what? This scripture doesn't apply to me, so I can easily bow down in front of this because I've got my spiritual loophole, right? Come on, we've done this so many times in our life. We've taken one little bitty scripture and one little bitty point, and we've tried to make ourselves a big door to walk through about why we shouldn't do it the way God said, do it. Of course, if none of these work for you, here's the real reason that I have to bow. God, I'm just too important. God, I'm doing a lot of good work for your cause, and well, if I don't bow down, they're going to kill me. And if they kill me, then who's going to do all the things that I do, right? I'm just too important. So God, you're going to have to hold your nose. You're going to have to look the other way. You and God can work this all out later, but you know what? I got to bow. Doesn't that work? Isn't this a lot of times how we approach our stand for God? It is really, really easy to stand for God when there are no consequences for standing for God. But as soon as there is a consequence for standing, we want to know, where's the escape hatch? How do I get out of this? But not these guys. Verses 16 through 18. This is their story. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him. So they didn't say it under their breath. They didn't mumble. They looked King Nebuchadnezzar square, dead in the eyes, and they said, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it. And he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. Boy, they didn't leave a lot of gray area here, did they? They didn't leave themselves one little bit of wiggle room. They basically looked at the king and they said, hey, king, it ain't going to happen. I want you to notice something very important, though. They took a stand, but they did not have to grandstand. They didn't need a bumper sticker. They didn't need a billboard. They didn't need a t-shirt. They didn't need a group behind them giving them moral support. It was just them, the king, and God. The other thing is that they did not feel they needed to defend. How many times have we used that? We have to defend the faith. You do understand the concept of defend the faith means that the entire purpose of a defense is to keep somebody out. You understand that, right? Therefore, when I use the term that I must defend my faith, my goal is not to propagate my faith. My goal is to build a barrier between you and my faith and say, you keep out. Doesn't that seem backwards to anybody else in the building? I'm not supposed to be defending my faith. I'm supposed to be proclaiming my faith. And when they looked at the king, they said, you know what? I don't have to tell you why I'm going to do what I'm going to do. You've already met my God twice. I don't have to give you an explanation. You just have to understand this is what I choose to do. And in the end, they looked at the king and they said, hey, we get you're a furious king. And we get your fire is hot. And we get you have every right to throw us in it if we decide not to bow. Here's the problem, king. We serve a higher authority than you. You do not get the final say in how we're going to stand for our God. That's convicting, isn't it? That's hard. Because I like my wiggle room. I like my gray area. I like to build my thing where I always give myself an out. I like my loopholes, folks. But again, that's because they viewed themselves differently than I view myself. They viewed themselves not as important people, but as, and here's our word from last week, humble servants. Were they important to what was going on in Babylon? Absolutely. Were they irreplaceable to what was going on in Babylon? Absolutely not. And they realized this. They understood. They were a cog in the machine, but if their cog, it was time for their cog to move on, then you know what? There will be another cog. That's what they were looking at when they said, king, not going to do it. Not going to serve them. King Nebuchadnezzar wanted to know what God will save you, and I love their answer. My God. My God. King, I don't even have to worry about this question. You want to know what God is going to save me? My God will deliver me. Now, in their answer, I want you to grasp something really, really, really important. And this ties very much into what we call an active prayer life. They believed God could save them. Their words is, he is able. They did not know if God, or did not know or claim if God would. I think a lot of times we do this to God. We draw a little line and say, well, God, if you love me, step over the line. God, if you want me to take a stand, then step over the line. And God's like, I got nothing to prove to you, folks. I came and put myself on a cross for you. There are no more lines left for me to step over. It's not always a guarantee that God's going to work it out the way that you want it to work. And Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego were not looking for a rescue party. As a matter of fact, they had no assurance from God that nothing bad will happen if they take a stand. I've heard people like to claim lots of scriptures in their life. And they have to say, well, if I do this, God's going to protect me. No, God will deliver you. But that doesn't always mean he's going to protect you. Because guess what? The fiery furnace was real. And King Nebuchadnezzar, no pun intended, wasn't blowing smoke. They were going into that fire if they did not kneel to that statue. And I want to tell you something. I've done the math and the science, and well, they had no idea on earth how God was going to rescue them. God, if I go in that fire, I know what happens to things that go into fire. I have played with enough fire in my life. I know what happens when things catch on fire. They burn up. And well, they said, that's okay. Perhaps they were looking at the bigger picture. Their rescue would be after their physical death. Because you notice in their little rendition there, when they were telling the king about how this was going to work out, they never said, God's going to rescue me. Their word was, God's going to deliver me. King, you throw me in that fire and you incinerate this human body, I just want to let you know something. It ain't over. Because I will no longer be in your hand. I will no longer be in your presence, because out of the body in the presence of the Lord, guess what? I got somewhere else to be. If you want to light this body on fire, you just go right ahead, because guess what? You still didn't kill me. All you did was burn the wrapping paper. I'm going to stand before God. And that's what's important to me. So in that moment, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego said, you know what? Our God could save us, King Nebuchadnezzar. But if he doesn't, we're okay with that. But even if he does not, we want you to know, Your Majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you had set up. My goodness. Are we brave enough to make that statement? In a world that's asking us all the time to kneel and bow and compromise and change this or rearrange that or do it just a little bit differently, are we brave enough to make such a statement to say, you know what? I respect the daylights out of you and I love you guys immensely, but I'm sorry at this point. No. Here's the bigger question. Are we brave enough to live that statement? It's one thing on Sunday morning when you're sitting here in this building and we're all together and everybody is in friends and we're happy little Christians all living in the same box to get up here and say, yes, I take a stand. What about tomorrow? Or the next day? What about when it's your friends or your family? What about when it's your neighbor? What about when your job is on the line? What about if you don't yield a little bit, then you know what? Somebody may never speak to you again because they're just going to put a barrier between it. What does that look like? Let me tell you what that looks like a lot of times for me. Where's the loophole? We start looking. We start looking for ways that we can back off of our stand and allow people space. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not do that. But at the same time, here's what had to really infuriate the king. They didn't disrespect the king. I think a lot of times we're guilty of this. And our idea of taking a stand, we feel like we've got to speak out against the government. Did they speak out against the government? No. They didn't look at that king and say, you pagan king, go out there and get that statue down. What's wrong with you? They didn't ask him to take the statue down at all. Matter of fact, they said, you know what, it's probably a pretty statue. It's fine. If you want to put a statue up, put a statue up. If people want to kneel down and worship it, let them worship it. I just want you to know, I will not do that. King, you've made your decision. I'm going to make mine. But they still addressed him with respect. Your Majesty. They understood. Determination did not result in degrading defiance. They didn't insult the king. They didn't lecture the king. They just looked at the king and said, if that is what you feel you must do, strike the match. we stand here. You've asked me to go and do something that is against what God said. We stand here. They did not give him more power than he deserves. They acknowledged his ability to take their life, but he did not give them the ability to take their God. That's a moment, folks. Have you ever had one of those kind of moments? Where you're standing at that point and you know, if I take this stand, it is going to cost me physically. I don't care. What's inside is more important than what's outside. You see, what they told him is dead or alive makes no difference when it comes to God. Paul expresses it this way in Philippians chapter 1, verses 20 through 21. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage, so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether in life or by death. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. You know why that's so frustrating for people? What can you do to a dead man? Nothing. Nothing. You can't hurt him. He's already dead. If I take the attitude that I am going to live for God, no matter the cost, I'm going to take my stand, and if you choose to kill me, woohoo, I still win. I imagine King Nebuchadnezzar's head just turned as red as he could. His ears were probably even red at this point. He probably had that mad face on. He's like, I can't believe these guys are doing this. But that's the attitude that they had took. They had decided, I am going to take a stand. Now, here's the cool part, or maybe the hot part. You can go read the rescue party story on your own. I'm going to skip all about how God rescued them, because that is not what we're looking at in this particular sermon series. I'm going to drop all the way down to verses 28 through 29, and I want you to see the lesson for the world and for us. So they went into the blazing fire. They're out. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command, were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any gold except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who says anything against God, the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other God can save in this way. I believe that makes the score God 3, world nothing. They lost at the table. They lost at the dream. And they just really got whipped when it came to the furnace. That's pretty impressive, because the king wanted them to worship, and now he's forced to praise over their stand. That's pretty amazing. Their stand was going to mean God's name would be known throughout the land. Wow. Talk about an outreach program. Everywhere they go, everybody's going to be talking about they just made headlines. Not because they took some political movement, because they made a godly stand. They said, here's my line. If you want to kill me over this line, strike the match. I'm good. But I shall not be moved beyond this point. They stood firm, which means a resolute or determined manner. Firm. Their stand left no wishy-wash. Their stand left no loopholes. And when they were tying them, you know, a lot of times we get the picture that when they were tying them up to put them in the fiery furnace and there was a struggle going on, I got a sneaking suspicion that when he said, fine, in you go, they're like, let me make this easy for you. Okay? I will show you. Don't have to tie me. Open the door. We'll walk right in. Because we're standing firm because we understand the picture is bigger than me and you. They answered the question loud and proud, folks. what God will save you from the fire? Really simple. My God. My personal I am, that I have a relationship. That is who I am counting on to save me from everything. My God is not the God, is not a God to be trifled with. What a lesson for King Nebuchadnezzar. And when we turn the next page, we're going to see that Nebuchadnezzar, his heart was changed. Now, did he become a Christian at this point, as we would call it, a true believer? I don't think so. I don't think that is where he got at all. But that's the story for next week. Let's end where we are right now. All right. That's a great story from Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It's a lot of fun, right? That was a good VBS story. We had the fiery furnace back here, and we talked about the great rescue. And it's all good to talk about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that they stood standing at the fiery furnace, and they stood for God, and they would not kneel. Let's forget about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego for a second. What about Parkview Christian Church? Oh, wait a minute now, Barry. It's a good Bible story until you realize it's not a Bible story. It's a you story. And as we live our faith in this world, we are going to have opportunities after opportunity after opportunity to take a stand, not a grandstand. I'm not talking about going out and getting picket signs and walking up and down the street. I'm not talking about any of the political stuff that you see. Let's forget about that for a minute, because that isn't going to solve anything. If you think that a march could solve anything, then God would have given us better shoes. Okay, because he would want us out marching. That is not what he said. He didn't say march. He said go. So let's just put all the politics and stuff that we usually turn to these kind of stands aside, and let's just talk about this for a minute. Is your faith that firm? Easy to say yes in the building, not as easy to say yes tomorrow morning. But is your faith that firm? Do you honestly believe that when that line is drawn in the sand and you say, you know what, there is no room for compromise, either you do it our way, even if God said no, you do it our way, or we, the world, the system, whatever you want to call it, are going to persecute you, and maybe even to the point that it will kill you. You understand, you're never going to make that decision unless you've first taken Paul's attitude. See, if you're waiting until the moment you're standing at that line to try to say, I am going to make my stand, you know what's going to happen, right? The line's going to move back a little bit, and so will you. And then the line will move back a little bit, and then so will you. See, this was the secret for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and for the Apostle Paul. They made the decision long before it was time to take the stand. Long before Paul was ever sitting in the prison looking at a guillotine, thinking that he was going to get beheaded, he poured out as a drink offering, as he called it. Paul had made a decision. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And that's a hard decision, folks. It is. I would love to tell you, I got this one all figured out. I don't. You know, it's one of those things that you have to get in front of God on a regular basis. Where did Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego relationship begin? Prayer. They spent so much time in the presence of God that when somebody said, step over the line, they're like, I don't think so. But how about us? We're in a world that is asking us to make a monument of compromises. Now, I'm not saying that you can never make a compromise as far as if it's not a God-said thing. You know, how long somebody's hair is, God don't care. Okay, you can't find a ruler measurement for me, so we're done. Okay, what's the right piece of clothes to wear to church? God don't care. Wear clothes, right? Please, just wear clothes. You know, those things don't matter. But when it comes to my relationship and whether or not I am going to do the way God said do them versus what the world is asking me to do, then there has to be a line. And that line needs to get established in your mind and in your heart long before you step up to the plate. So take this question very seriously, folks. How firm is your footing? Is it built on sand or on rock? When you stand firm on your faith, does your faith kind of have some shift to it, some motion to it, some wiggle room to it, some compromise to it? Or does it have lines that are not drawn in the sand but etched in concrete? This is what God said. And I shall do it, even if it costs me everything. That's a hard moment, folks.